Hello, dear, Maleficent's cold voice said. Do you know what time it is, young lady? Mal was confused. Since when had Maleficent imposed a curfew? It wasn't as if her mother cared where she went or when she came home. Now, did she? After all, the woman wasn't called Maleficent for nothing. 2 in the morning? Mal finally guessed. I thought so, Maleficent said, pushing up a black sleeve and correcting the time on her wristwatch. She pulled the sleeve down and looked at her daughter. Mal waited, wondering where this was going. She hadn't seen her mother in a while. And when they did come in contact, Mal was often taken aback by how small her mother looked these days. The Mistress of Darkness had literally shrunk with the reduction in her circumstances. Whereas once she had been towering, she was now almost a miniature version of her former self. Petite, even. If she stood up, one could see that Mal was taller than she was by a few inches. Yet the distinctive menace had not abated. It just came in a tinier package. Where was I? Oh, yes. Evil lives, Maleficent hissed. Evil lives. Exactly, Mother. Mal nodded. Is that what you want to talk to me about? The tags are out down? Pretty good, right? No. You misunderstand me, dear, her mother said. And it was then that Mal noticed that her mother was not alone. She was petting a black raven that was perched on the arm of her chair. The raven croaked, flew to Mal's shoulder, and nipped her ear. Ouch! She said, stop that! That's just Diablo. Don't be jealous, my little friend. That's just Mal, Maleficent said dismissively. And even if Mal knew that her mother couldn't care less about her, Mal tried not to take it personally, as her mother couldn't care less about anyone, it still stung to hear it said aloud so bluntly. Diablo? That's Diablo? Said Mal. She knew all about Diablo, Maleficent's first and only friend. Her mother had told her the story many times. How, 20 years ago now, Maleficent had battled Prince Philip as a great, black, fiery dragon, but had been struck down, betrayed by a weapon of justice and peace that some irritatingly good fairies had helped aim right into her heart. Maleficent had believed herself dead and passed from this world. But instead, she had woken up the next day, alone and broken, on this terrible island. The only remnant of the battle was the scar on her chest where the sword had struck. And every so often, she would feel the phantom pain of that wound. She had told Mal many times how when she woke up, she had realized that those awful good fairies had taken everything away from her. Her castle, her home, even her favorite pet raven. The one and only Diablo, purred Maleficent, actually looking happy for once. But how? He was frozen. They turned him into stone, said Mal. Yes, they did, those horrid little beasts. But he's back. He is back. And evil lives, Maleficent declared, with a witch's cackle for good measure. Okay. Her mother was getting just a wee bit repetitive. Mal gave her mother her best eye roll. To the rest of the fools, minions, and morons on the island, Maleficent was the scariest thing with two horns around. But to Mal, who had seen her mother put goblin jelly on toast and drop crumbs all over the couch, polish her horns with shoe polish, and sew the raggedy hemline of her purple cape, she was just her mother. And Mal wasn't that scared of her. Okay, so she was still scared of her mother, but she wasn't like Carlos scared. Maleficent stood from her chair, her green eyes blazing into Mal's identical ones. My dragon's eye, my scepter of darkness. Diablo says it has been awakened. Evil lives. And best of all, it is on this island. Your scepter? Are you sure? Mal asked skeptically. Hard to believe King Beast of Auradon would leave such an impressive weapon on the isle. Diablo swears he saw it. Didn't you, my sweet? Maleficent purred. The raven cawed. So where is it? Asked Mal. Well, I don't speak raven, do I? It's on this blasted piece of rock somewhere. Maleficent fumed, tossing her cape back. Okay, then. But so what? So what? The dragon's eye is back. Evil lives. It means I can have my powers back. Not with the dome still up, Mal pointed out. It doesn't matter. I thought those three despicably good fairies had destroyed it. But they had only frozen it, like they had Diablo. It is alive. It is out there somewhere. And best of all, you, my dear, will get it for me. Maleficent announced with a flourish. Me? Yes. Don't you want to prove yourself to me? Prove that you're worthy of being my daughter? Her mother asked quietly. Mal didn't answer. You know how much you are a disappointment to me. How when I was your age, I had armies of goblins under my control. But you, what do you do? Put your little drawings all over town? You need to do more, she seethed, standing up from her chair. Diablo flapped his wings and cawed in agreement. Mal tried not to show her feelings. She thought those tags were pretty cool. Fine, fine, I'll get your scepter, she agreed, if only to stop her mother from raging. Wonderful. Maleficent touched her heart, or the hole in her chest where it should have been. When that sword pierced my dragon hide, and I fell off that cliff 20 years ago, I was sure I had died. But they brought me back to suffer a fate worse than death, much worse. But one day, I will have my revenge. Mal nodded. She'd heard the spiel so many times she could chant it in her sleep. Maleficent took her hand and they chorused. Revenge on the fools who imprisoned us on this cursed island. Maleficent urged Mal closer so that she could whisper a warning in her ear. Yes, mother, said Mal to show she understood. Maleficent grinned. Now, get out of here and bring it back, so we can be free of this floating prison once and for all. Mal trudged up to her room. She'd forgotten to tell her mother about the mean trick she'd pulled on Evie at the party. Not that it would have been evil enough for the great Maleficent, either. Nothing was. Why did she even bother? She climbed out her window and onto the balcony where she could see across the entire island, and the shining spires of Auradon glimmered in the distance. A few minutes later, she heard the sound of jiggling trinkets, which meant Jay had dropped by to annoy her or to steal a late-night snack. I'm out here, she called. You left before the fun really began, he said, meaning the party. We turned the ballroom into a mosh pit and crowd-surfed. He joined her on the balcony, a bag of smelly cheese curls in his hand. She shrugged. What's with the rude raven? He asked, chomping noisily on the snack, his fingers turning a fluorescent shade of orange. That's Diablo. You know, my mom's old familiar? He's back. Jay stopped chewing. He's what? He's back? He got unfrozen, so now Mom thinks a spell over the islands might be unraveling somehow. Jay's eyes grew wide. Mal looked away and continued. That's not all. Diablo swears the dragon's eye is back, too. That he saw it glow back to life. You know, her scepter, her greatest weapon. The one that controls all the forces of evil and darkness, blah, blah, blah. She wants me to find it and use it to break the curse over the island. Jay let out a loud laugh. Well, she's really gone off the cliff into the deep end to take a swim with the killer alligators then, hasn't she? That thing is hidden forever and ever and ever and ever, Mal smirked. Exactly. Mal turned away, wanting to change the subject. Do you ever think about what it's like over there? She asked, nodding toward Auradon. Jay scoffed. Yeah, horrible. Sunny and happy and horrible. I thank my unlucky stars every day that I'm not there. Yeah, I know, but I mean, you never get sick of this place, like, you want to change? She asked, brooding. Jay looked at her quizzically. Never mind. Mal didn't think he would understand. She continued staring into the night. Jay continued munching on his cheese curls and fiddling with some newly stolen costume jewelry. A memory came flooding back to Mal. She was 5 years old and was in the marketplace with her mother when a goblin tripped and fell, spilling his basket of fruit everywhere. Without thinking, she had started picking up the fruit, helping the goblin gather it all. One by one, she picked up the apples, dusted them off on her dress, and placed them back in the basket. Suddenly, Mal looked up from where she was crouched. The market had gone silent, and everyone, including her mother, who was rotten apple red and fuming, was staring at her. Get up this instant, her mother had hissed. Maleficent kicked the basket and the apples fell out again. Mal obeyed. When they got back home, her mother locked her in her room to think about what she had done. If you're not careful, my girl, you'll end up just like him. Just like your father. Weak and powerless and pathetic. Maleficent had bellowed through the locked door. Little Mal had stared into the dingy mirror, leaning precariously on her vanity. Fighting back tears, she vowed never to disappoint her mother again. We have to find it, Mal said to Jay as an icy wind whipped up from the sea below and pulled her from her memory. The dragon's eye? It's here. Mal, it's not possible. We have to, Mal said. Jay replied, shrugging his shoulders and turning toward the window to go back inside. We'll see. Mal took one last look out at the horizon to the bright, sparkling speck in the distance. She felt a pang in her gut, like longing. But what for? She couldn't say. Miserable, darling. As usual, perfectly wretched. Cruella de Vil, 101 Dalmatians. Chapter 12. Score one for the team. Jay left the bargain castle behind him. It was the very end of the night, the time when it was just turning toward morning, when it was still dark, but you could already hear the mournful call of the vultures scavenging their way across the island. He shivered, retracing his steps through the grim back streets and alleyways of the town, past the eerily bare trees and broken shuttered buildings that looked as abandoned and hopeless as everyone who lived there. Jay quickened his pace. He wasn't scared of the dark. He depended on it. Jay did some of his best work at night. He'd never get used to the way the island felt in the darkness, though. Jay picked up on it most when everyone else was asleep, and he could see the world around him clearly, for what it was. He could see that this town and this island and these bare trees and these broken shutters were his life. No matter what other life his father and his peers had known, there was no glory here, no magic, and no power either. This was it, all they would ever have, or be, or know. no matter what Mal thinks. Jay kicked a rock across the crumbling cobblestones, and an irritated cat howled back at him from the shadows. She's so full of it. Mal wouldn't admit it, their defeat, especially not when she was in a mood like tonight. Mal was so stubborn sometimes, practically delusional. In moments like these, Jay had clearly seen the effects of a raised by a maniacal villain upbringing. He couldn't blame Mal for not wanting to tell her mother no. Nobody would. But really, there was no way that Maleficent's scepter was somewhere on the Isle of the Lost. And even if it was, Jay and Mal would never find it. Jay shook his head. Eye of the Dragon? More like Eye of Desperation. That raven is bonkers. Probably from being frozen for 20 years. He shrugged and rounded the corner to his own street. He tried to forget about it, half expecting and half hoping Mal would probably do the same. She had her whims, but they never seemed to last. That was the good thing about Mal. She would get all worked up about something, but totally drop it the next day. They got along because Jay had learned to just ride out the storm. When he finally made his way through the last of the puzzle of stolen locks, chains, and deadbolts that guarded his own house, thieves being the most paranoid about burglary, he pushed the rotting wooden door open with a creak and crept inside. 1 foot at a time. Shift your body weight as you step. Stick close to the wall.
Jay? Is that you?
Crap. His father was still awake, cooking eggs, his faithful parrot Iago on his shoulder. Was Jafar worried about his only son being out so late? Was he worried about where he'd been or who he'd been with or why he hadn't come home until now?
Nah.
His father had only one thing on his mind, and Jay knew exactly what it was. What's tonight's haul? Jafar asked greedily as he set his plate of food down on the kitchen table, next to a pile of rusty coins that passed for currency on the island. The table was where Jafar practiced his favorite hobby, counting his money. There was a good-sized pyramid of coins on the table, but Jay knew it wouldn't satisfy Jafar's greed. Nothing did. Nice pajamas, Jay smirked. The trick with his father was to keep moving, to stay on your toes, and above all else, to avoid answering the question, because none of the answers were ever right. When you couldn't win, you shouldn't give in and play. That was just setting yourself up for a disaster. I mean, my dad's best friend is a parrot. Enough said.
Nice pajamas, Iago squawked. Nice pajamas.
Jafar was wearing a faded bathrobe over saggy pajamas with little lamps printed all over them. If 20 years of being frozen could turn a raven cuckoo, 20 years of life among the lost had done just as much to diminish the former Grand Vizier of Agrabah's infamy, along with his grandeur and panache. At least, that was how his father thought of it. Gone were the sumptuous silks and plush velvet jackets, replaced by a uniform of ratty velour sweatsuits and sweat-stained undershirts that smelled a little too strongly of their shop's marketplace stand, which was located, rather unfortunately and quite directly, across from the horse stalls. The sleek, black beard was now raggedy and gray, and there was the aforementioned gut. Iago had taken to calling him the Sultan, since Jafar now resembled his old adversary in size. Although, in all fairness, Iago himself looked like he was on a daily cracker binge. In return, Jafar called his feathered pal things that were unrepeatable by any standard, even a parrot's. Jay hated his father's pajamas. They were a sign of how far their once royalty-adjacent family had fallen. The flannel was worn so thin, in places you could see Jafar's belly roll beneath it. Jay tried not to look too closely, even now, in the shadows of the early morning light. His father ignored the pajama insults. He'd heard them all before. He wolfed down his midnight snack with relish without offering Jay a bite. Come on, come on, get on with it. What did we get? Let's have a look. Jay eyed his carpet roll at the end of the room beyond the table. But he also knew there was no way of getting past his father now. He reluctantly unpacked his pockets. Broken glass slipper. Got it from one of the step-granddaughters. With some glue, we could get a good price for it. The cracked, heel-less slipper shattered into a pile of glass shards the moment it hit the table. Jafar raised an eyebrow. Super glue? Jay kept going. One of Lucifer's collars, Rick Ratcliffe's pistol keychain, and look, a real glass eye. It was covered in lint. It's only a little used. I got it from one of the pirates. He held it up to his own eye and peered through the glass, then jerked it away, wrinkling his nose and fanning his face with his hand. Why don't pirates ever bathe? Hello, it's called a shower. It's not like they're even out at sea anymore. With that, he rolled the eyeball across the table to his father. Iago squawked curiously while Jay waited for the inevitable. Jafar waved a dismissive hand over the items and sighed. Garbage. Garbage! Iago shrieked. Garbage! But that's all there is on this island, Jay argued, leaning against the kitchen sink. This is the Isle of the Lost. The Isle of the Leftovers, remember? His father frowned. You went to the DeVille place, and you didn't score a fur coat? What were you doing in there all night, slobbering over Maleficent's girl? Jay rolled his eyes. For the 10,000th time, no. It's not like I was the one locked in the coat closet. As he said it, he wondered why he hadn't thought of that. You need to try harder. What about that princess? The one who's just come out of the castle? Oh, yeah, her. I forgot. Jay dug into his jeans pocket and brought out a silver necklace with a red poisoned apple charm on it. That's all she had on her. I'm telling you, even the castles around this place are dumps. Jafar put on a pair of spectacles and examined the jewelry, squinting first with one eye, then with the other. His eyesight was going, and his back ached from the extra work of carrying around his own sweat-suited belly. Even villains were not spared the perils of aging. Paste and glass. In my day, a servant wouldn't have worn that, let alone a princess. Not quite the big score we're looking for. He tossed the bauble aside, sighing as he stopped to feed Iago another cracker. Score, said Iago, gleefully spitting cracker crumbs. Big score. Jay's shoulders slumped. The big score. It was his father's dream that one day his only son would find a cachet of loot so big, so rich, so laden with gold that Jafar would no longer have to preside over a junk shop ever again. No matter that the Isle of the Lost was a floating rubbish heap, somehow Jafar believed the big score was always right around the corner. A bounty that could transport him back to his rightful place as a sorcerer, with all its power and trappings. Talk about delusional. Even if it did exist, could such a treasure take any of them back in time to a better day, or free them from a lifetime of imprisonment? As if an object, or a jewel, or any amount of gold coins could fix the mess that people like Jafar had gotten them all into in the first place. The big score. His father was as crazy as Mal had been tonight. Jay shook his head. And then he just shook. Because he'd thought of something. Hang on. What had Mal told him tonight? That the raven believed Maleficent's scepter, the dragon's eye, was hidden somewhere on this island? If Diablo was telling the truth, and Jay was able to find it, it would be the biggest score of the year, of the century. He thought it through, Was it possible? Could it be that easy? Could his father have been right to hold on to the faintest hope for something better, even after all these years? Nah. Jay rubbed his eyes. It had been a long night. There was no way that thing was on the Isle of the Lost. There was nothing of power here. Not when it came to people. And not when it came to their stuff. And even if it was here, however unlikely that might be, the dome over the island kept out all magic. The dragon's eye was just a fancy name for a walking stick now. Like he told Mal, it was a useless enterprise. They were better off trying to hijack a boat out of the Goblin Wharf back to Auradon. Not that any of them would want to live there. Maybe we belong on the Isle of the Lost, Leftover, and Forgotten. Only, who's going to break the news to my dad? Jay watched as his father returned to stacking the coins in neat piles. Counting coins gave him peace in some way his son would never understand. Jafar was whistling and looked up when he saw Jay staring at him. Remember the golden rule? His father purred as he caressed the money with his hands. Totally. Night, Dad, Jay said, heading to the worn carpet underneath the shelves in the back where he slept. Whoever has the most gold makes the rules. It's what his father believed. And while Jay had never seen any gold in his life, he'd been taught to believe it too. He just wasn't sure that he believed there was any gold to find. Not on the Isle of the Lost. Still, as he curled up on the hard bit of carpeted floor that was his bed, he tried to imagine what it would feel like to find it. The big score. He fell asleep dreaming of his father bursting with pride in a pair of pajamas made of gold. Chapter 13. Aftershocks. Cruella was going to kill him if she ever found out he'd thrown a party while she was away. People on the island kept telling him Cruella had mellowed with age, that she was rounder and less shouty, but they didn't have to live with her. Cruella de Vil's son knew his mother better than anyone. If his mother had any idea that he'd let a bunch of people come over, and even worse, let anyone even come near her fur closet, let alone inside it, let alone be tackled in a pile of full-length grade A pelt coats. Well, let's just say it wouldn't be a puppy she would be trying to skin. But thankfully, his mother was still at the spa and hadn't returned unexpectedly as she was wont to do sometimes, if only to keep her son and Jasper and Horace on their miniony toes. Carlo stumbled out of bed and found a few bleary-eyed guests wandering around Hal Hall, smelling like last night's spiked cider. You're probably looking for the bathroom? This way. No problem. He shoved them out of the front door before they could realize what was happening. As he did, Harry and Jace, the two young, second-generation DeVille minions who had helped him decorate for the party, stumbled out of the ballroom with crepe paper in their hair. Morning, said Carlos, his voice still froggy with sleep. Why are you wearing the party? I told him not to get me tangled up in his stupid streamers, Harry said, still surly. You told me? You were the one playing tag all night, dragging half the decorations around after you. I was entertaining guests. Then why was no one playing with you? As usual, there was no hope of real conversation with either of them. Carlos gave up. His cousin, Diego de Vil, gave him a thumbs up from the couch. Great party. Total howler. The rest of the band was packing up their gear. Thanks, I think. Carlos wrinkled his nose. The gloomy morning light made everything look sadder and more sordid. Even the chandelier's candles had burnt down to stubs, and someone had broken the rope swing so that it swayed gently, brushing the floor.
We'd better get out of here so you can clean up, Diego grinned. Or did your mom say to leave it for her to do when she got home? He burst out laughing.
Very funny. Carlos ignored his cousin, pushing his way through the swinging door that led to the kitchen. He was hungry. His heart hurt, and he hadn't slept well, dreaming anxiously of keeping the party a secret from his mother, but also of the dazzling light that had emanated from his machine and hit the dome. Did that really happen? For a moment there, Carlos thought he had felt something in the air, something wild and electric and thrumming with energy. Magic? Could it be? He wondered if he could make the machine do it again. After breakfast, he poked his head into the kitchen, which looked like a party bomb had exploded. Every counter and surface was sticky and littered with cups, bowls, bits of popcorn and chips, rotten deviled eggs, uneaten devil dogs, and empty bottles of cider. His feet stuck and unstuck with every step on the floor, ripping up and down with a noise that was part Velcro, part pseudopod. He took a broom and began to sweep and clean, just enough so that he could get to the fridge and the shelves.
Hey, can I just...
Carlos said, pushing a snoring Clay Clayton away from the kitchen counter to grab his breakfast. Clay was the son of the great hunter who'd almost captured Tarzan's guerrilla troop. Almost being the operative word. Like every villain on the isle, each one's evil schemes had ultimately ended in failure. Carlos filled a bowl with some congealed, lumpy oatmeal and grabbed a spoon just as the Gastons stuck their heads inside.
Hey, man, what have you got there? Breakfast? Don't mind if we do.
The burly brothers high-fived him as they stole his cold porridge from under his nose on their way out the door. Being the Gastons, they were the last to leave and the first to steal all the food. As usual.
I guess I wasn't hungry anyway, Carlos said out loud,
although only he was listening.
We should get busy and clean this place up before my mom gets home.
He sighed and picked up the broom. There was way too much to clean. But he was Carlos Deville, boy genius, wasn't he? Surely he could figure out a way to make this task easier. Yes, he would. He just had to put his mind to it. He would take care of the cleanup later. First, he had to go to school. Back at her own castle, Evie hadn't been able to sleep any better than Carlos had. Perhaps her dreams weren't plagued by Cruella de Vil or the cracking dome, but they were tormented by endless mazes of dark rooms and snapping traps. And she had woken up in a full sweat, just as one was about to clamp down on her leg with its steel jaws again. I can't go back to school, she thought. Not after last night. The thought of having to face Mal again made her stomach queasy. Besides, what was wrong with staying home? Home was, well, home, wasn't it? So, maybe it wasn't nice here, but it was safe. Relatively cozy, in a not exactly traditionally cozy way. Or not. Okay, so it was cold and musty and basically a cave. Or a prison, as she had come to think of it during her years of castle schooling. And today, like most days of her life, Evie could hear her mother talking to herself in her imaginary magic mirror voice. Again. But at least at home there were no traps and no purple-haired wicked fairies angling for revenge. There were no confusing frenemies, if she and Mal were even that. I don't know what we are, but I know I don't like it. And here I thought, once I got to a real school, my life was going to be so much better. Evie got up and went to her desk, which had a few of her old textbooks from her years of castle schooling. She picked up her favorite, a worn leather grimoire, the Evil Queen's personal spellbook. Of course, it was useless on the Isle, but Evie still liked reading all the spells. It was like a catalog of her mother's finer days. Of a time before she spent hour after useless hour rattling around the empty rooms of the castle doing the voice. It made Evie feel better, sometimes, to remember that things hadn't always been like this. She paged through the spellbook's worn yellow pages like she had when she was a little girl. She had pored over them the way she imagined the princesses in Auradon pored over their stupid fairy tales. She studied them the way other princesses studied, well, other princesses. There were truth spells involving candles and water, love spells that called for flower petals and blood, health spells and wealth spells, spells for luck and spells for doom. Trickster spells were her favorite, especially the peddler's disguise, which her mother had used to fool that silly Snow White. That was a good one. A classic, even. Hi, sweetie, Evil Queen said, entering her bedroom. You're looking pale again. Let me blush. She removed a big round brush and began to work on Evie's cheeks. Pink as an apple blossom. There. Much better. She looked down at the book in her daughter's hand. Oh, that old thing. I never understand. Why would you want to get that out again? I don't know. Maybe because I just can't picture it. I mean, did you really do the spell? You? Evie somehow couldn't imagine her mother as a frightening old hag. Sure, she was plump and middle-aged and no longer resembled the formidable portrait of her that hung in the main gallery, but she was far from ugly. Oh, yes! It was a scream! Snow, why so stupid, was completely fooled. What a dope, Evil Queen giggled. I mean, hello, door-to-door apple hag in the middle of the forest. Good times. Evie shook her head. Still, her mother fussed with her hair. Wait, why are you here? Shouldn't you be in school? I don't feel like going, Evie confessed. I'm not sure it's right, after all, going to a big school. Maybe I should just stay in the castle. Evil Queen shrugged. Who needs an education anyway? Pretty is as pretty is. Remember that, darling. Don't worry. You don't let me forget. It's attention to the little things. You have to work for it, and you have to want it. Your eyelashes aren't going to curl themselves, you know. Nope. You're going to curl them for me, even if I don't want you to. That's right. And why? So that one day, you can have what's rightfully yours, even if you are stuck on this miserable island. It is your birthright to be the fairest of them. Oh, those aren't simply words. I'm pretty sure they are, actually. It's a responsibility. Ours, yours and mine. With great beauty comes great power. Evie just stared. When her mother got like this, it was hard to talk her down. I can't want this more than you do, Evie. Her mother sighed, shaking her head. I know, Evie said, because it was true. But what am I supposed to do? What if I don't know what I want or how to get it? So you try harder. You reapply. You add that extra layer of gloss over your matte lip stain. You use your blush and your bronzer and make sure you don't confuse the two. Bronzer on the bone. Blush on the cheek, Evie said automatically. You know which mascara makes your eyes pop?
Blue for brown, gold for green, purple for blue, Evie recited, as if these were her family's version of math facts. Exactly. Evil Queen clasped her fingers around her daughters in a touching, if rare, maternal gesture. And please, my darling girl, never forget who you really are. Who am I? Evie said, squeezing her mother's hand. She felt so lost. More than anything, it was all she wanted to know.
Someone who needs to use elixir on her hair or it looks too frizzy.
With those parting words, Evil Queen left the room, gathering up her dark skirts behind her.
Mirror! Magic mirror!
Yeah, Evie thought. She could stay here, reading her old books and watching Orange on News Network just like before. Later, if she was really lucky, her mother would come into her room to give her yet another interesting hairstyle. Even though Evie had told her millions of times she preferred the V-braid. This is my life when I'm in the castle. Braiding and blushing and bronzing. That was the thing about leaving home, she guessed. Once you'd made your way out into the world, once you'd left the darkness of the cave, it was hard to go back. Even to make your hair smooth and your eyes pop. The more Evie thought about it, the more she knew she couldn't stay in the castle one more second. She'd read all the books and watched all the shows, and there was no one to talk to other than her mother, who was only obsessed with the latest cosmetics that arrived on the dumpster barges, the used tubes of lipstick, and open jars of cream that the Auradon princesses tossed when they didn't want them anymore. Even school has to be better than this. Besides, she could deal with Mal, couldn't she? She wasn't scared of her. Not that scared of her. Okay, so maybe she was. But Evie was more terrified of rotting in a cave forever. And she was far too young to start working on her own magic mirror voice. She shook her head at the thought. Pretty is as pretty is. Was that what my mother said? But what was the point of being pretty if there was no one there to see how pretty you were? Even the crack on her ceiling was starting to look like the dragon's eye. Mal stared up at it from her bed, transfixed. She had woken up extra early, even earlier than Carlos and Evie, as she couldn't sleep, thinking of the quest her mother had all but immediately dispatched her on. Maleficent was like that. Once she had an idea in her head, there was no stopping her. It didn't matter if it was her daughter or one of her minions. She expected everyone to stop and drop and risk everything to do her bidding. That was the Maleficent way. Mal knew there was no exception made for daughters. Not when you were one of the all-time most villainous villains of the Isle of the Lost. You didn't get to be number one by being merciful, or even reasonable. Not when you were one of the evil elite. Maleficent wanted the dragon's eye back, which was great and all, and Mal totally got it. But actually trying to find out where it was on the island? No, that was something else entirely. So yeah, it wasn't as if Diablo were any help. All the raven did was call when Mal poked it. Where is it, huh? Dee? If you're back to life, then it can't be far, right? But where? He'd poke her eyes out if she got close enough to let him. That stupid bird had always wanted her mother all to himself. And to him, Mal wasn't even a threat, as much as a nuisance. Still, it was more than just a bird that was haunting her now. Maleficent's threats were hard to shake. As always, her mother knew exactly where to strike. She could find her daughter's soft spots as easily now as when she had been a baby wearing one on the top of her own head. Don't you want to prove yourself to me? Prove that you are worthy of the name I bestowed on you, Maleficent?
Mal turns over in her hard, squeaky bed, restless. Yes, Mal was named for her mother, but her mother liked to say that since Mal had shown so far that she was only a tiny bit evil, Mal could only have a tiny bit of her real name until she proved herself truly worthy of her dark fairy heritage. Which was ridiculous, really, if you thought about it. Mal didn't exactly have an army of evil resources at her command. She made do with what she had to work with. Stolen paint cans, hapless high school kids, a closet full of old mink coats and fur traps. Sure, maybe she wasn't encasing whole castles and hedges of thorns, but then every villain had to start somewhere, didn't she? And if she had to let Evie off the hook at the end of the night, that wasn't her fault either, was it? It wasn't like you could put a timeline on this kind of a thing. Good scheming took a little planning, didn't it? Mal turned over again. It was still quiet in the Bargain Castle, which meant that Maleficent hadn't gone out on the balcony yet to harangue and humiliate her subjects. When Mal finally slid out of bed, slithered into today's purple everything, and tiptoed out of her bedroom, she noticed that the door to her mother's room was locked, which meant Maleficent was not to be disturbed under any circumstance. She was adamant about getting 8 hours of evil sleep and recommended a healthy diet of nightmares to keep the claws sharp. It had worked for her so far, hadn't it? Mal brooded on her mother's warning as she hurried down the crumbling staircase. The dragon's eye was cursed, as Maleficent had told her, which meant that anyone who touched it would immediately fall asleep for 1,000 years. That had always been her mother's specialty, putting people to sleep against their will. Of course, that hadn't exactly worked out during the whole Sleeping Beauty debacle, but that didn't mean that the dragon's eye staff would be any less powerful now. When Mal found the scepter, she would have to take care not to touch it, and then to figure out a way to somehow bring it back without awakening the curse. If it still works. If I find it. If it exists at all. As Mal picked up her backpack, she only felt worse. Even dumping an extra spray can into her bag didn't lift her spirits. Maybe Jay was right. Maybe this whole quest was too silly to even embark on. She didn't know where to begin to find her mother's lost weapon, no matter how powerful it once had been. Whom was she to think she could find something that had been lost for so long? Maybe she should just forget about it and go back to her usual routine of tagging and shoplifting. Besides, it wasn't as if anything Mal could do would change how her mother saw her. Even if she did succeed in finding the dragon's eye, Mal knew she couldn't help who her father had been. And in the end, that was what Maleficent could never forgive, nor forget. The one thing Mal herself could never fix. So why bother? Why try? Maybe she should just accept it and move on. That's what her mother expected from her anyway. To fail, to disappoint, to give up, to give in. Just like everyone else in this place. Mal pulled open the castle door and set out for school, trying not to think about it. Chapter 14. Evil Enrichments. Like many nerds before him, Carlos liked school. He wasn't ashamed to admit it. He would have told as much to anyone who bothered to ask. Since no one did, however, he reviewed the argument himself. He liked the structure and the rules of school. He liked the work, too. Answering the kinds of questions that had answers, and exploring the ones that didn't. While there were parts of school that were torture, like when he was forced to run the length of the tombs and gym, why practice fleeing on foot when they lived on an island, or when he had to work with assigned partners, usually the kind who teased him for not being able to run the length of the tombs and gym, the other parts more than made up for it. Those were the good parts, The parts where you actually used your brain, for which Carlos liked to think he was better equipped than the average villain. And he was right, because Carlos Deville's brain, by way of comparison, was almost as big as Cruella Deville's fur coat closet. That's what Carlos tried to tell himself anyway, especially when people were making him run the tombs. His first class today was Weird Science, one he always looked forward to. It was where he'd originally gotten the idea to put his machine together, from the lesson on radio waves. Carlos was not the only top student in the class. He was tied, in fact, with the closest thing he had to a rival in the whole school. The scrawny, bespectacled Reza. Reza was the son of the former royal astronomer of Agrabah, who had consulted with Jafar to make sure the stars aligned on more than one nefarious occasion, which was how his family had found their way to the Isle of the Lost with everyone else. Weird Science was the class where Carlos always worked the hardest. The presence of Reza, who was every bit as competitive in science lab as he was, only made Carlos work that much harder. And as annoying as everyone found Reza to be, he always had to use the very biggest words for everything, whether or not correctly, and whether or not he was inserting a few extra syllables where they might or might not belong. He was still smart. Very smart. Which meant Carlos enjoyed besting him. Just the other week, they had been working on a special elixir, and Reza had been annoyed that Carlos had figured out the secret ingredient first. Yeah, Reza was almost as smart as he was irritating. Even now, he was raising his hand, waving it wildly back and forth. Their professor, the formerly powerful sorcerer Yen Sid, ignored him. Instead, Yen Sid resumed their lesson by quoting his favorite phrase, "Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic." The secretive magician smiled from his lectern, his bald head glowing under the light, and his large gray beard covering half his chest. He had traded in his sorcerer's robes for a chemist's white coat, now that there was no market in magic, and, well, no magic to speak of. Reza raised his hand again. Once again, Yen Sid ignored him, and Carlos smiled to himself. Just because there is no magic on the Isle of the Lost does not mean we cannot make our own, Yen Sid said. In fact, we can create everything we need for a spell right in this classroom. The answer to our situation is right in front of us. From fireworks to explosions, everything can be made from science. "Except science is boring," said one of the Gastons. "And also, what's that smell?" said the other Gaston, slapping his brother on the head. "Because, you know, beans are the magical fruit." "Shut up," Carlos hissed. He wanted to listen. Reza's hand shot up again. "Me, me, me." "I'm talking about the magic of science," Yen Sid said, ignoring both Gastons and Reza. "Excuse me? Excuse me, Professor?" Reza couldn't contain himself any longer. He was practically squeaking in his seat. Carlos snorted. The professor sighed. "What is it, Reza?" Reza stood up. "Irregardless, the irrelevancy of my classmates' simplistical commentation bears no meaningfulness to this experiment in point of fact." "Thank you, Reza." Yen Sid understood, as Carlos did, that Reza had just said the Gastons were stupid, which was news to no one at all. Reza cleared his throat. "If science is in fact magic, i.e., per se, could one then correspondingly and accordingly posit the postulate that magic is thus, ergo, to wit, also science? Quid pro quo, quod erat demonstrandum, QED? Yen Sid rolled his eyes. Muffled snorts and snickers came from the rest of the class. "Yes, Reza. Science could be described, in fact, as magic. From certain perspectives. But you don't have to take my word for it. Why don't you start today's experiment and find out for yourself? Reza's hand shot up again. The whole class started to laugh. Yensid looked at him sternly. Like your classmate Carlos here, who, instead of wasting time with more talk, is halfway done with the assignment. He raised an eyebrow at Reza. Reza's face turned red. The class laughed harder. Today's lesson focused on engineering. Carlos's heart warmed as he bent over his desk and applied himself to the task of learning how to make a robotic broom that swept by itself. It was a solution to his earlier problem. With this invention, he would be able to clean Hell Hall in a jiffy. He even had a name for it, the Broomba. The Gastons grumbled, but Carlos couldn't even hear them, not when he was working. He tightened a screw on the motor of his broom. This was the real magic.